Hey, this is Peter Biello, host of The Bookshelf from NHPR. And if you like this podcast, you will also like NHPR's 10-Minute Writers Workshop. In each episode, NHPR's Virginia Prescott speaks with authors about their process, their bad habits, and their best advice for aspiring writers. So even if you are not a writer, it is fascinating to hear how today's notable authors get their work done. Really, really inspiring. If you are a writer, interesting, even if you aren't. So subscribe to the 10-Minute Writers Workshop on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. Okay, onto the bookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. In her new collection of poetry, Peterborough resident Becky Dennison-Sacolario finds a linguistic middle ground between her two homes, New England and Greece. That middle ground is fertile territory where figs, olives, and almonds grow and lure us into that world. It's no wonder that the book is called No Foothold in This Geography. It traces landscapes that blend into each other, landscapes rife with love, loss, and human disasters large and small. Becky Dennison-Sacolario joins me now to talk about her collection of poetry. Welcome to The Bookshelf.
Thank you, Peter.
You've written that your time in Greece has been inspirational for your poetry. What circumstances brought you to Greece?
Well, I was at Antioch College in the 60s, and I don't know if you know, but Antioch was an experimental college. It was a five-year college because they did a work-study program. You were studying for 3 months, and then you went out into the world and worked. They also had a wonderful study abroad program, and I went to Italy to study for a year. When I finished in Italy, of course, I hitchhiked around Europe and hitchhiked to Greece and fell in love with a Greek and stayed there and married him.
In your poetry, you write so often about food, you know, the almonds, the figs, the mangoes especially, so sensual in one of these poems. Each time it seems to evoke a different emotion or bring some kind of access to that emotion. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of food in your poetry?
You know, when I write, whatever comes to me comes into the poem. So, and if I look, I allow that to happen. But if I look back at the sort of bulk of my work, I do see that there's a lot of food, a lot of plants, a lot of nature in it. And I never asked myself why, but I assume it's because that's the way I experience the physical world that I'm in. And that's what talks to me, let's say.
You have this wonderful way of weaving other poets' work into your own. You do this with Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver actually appears a few times in your poems. Is she one of your major influences?
Oh, I love Mary Oliver. Just love her stuff. Always have.
What is it about her work that appeals to you?
Again, she's right there in the world of the natural, the bugs and the bees and the herons and the water. And she connects that to her spiritual world, to the meaning of living, and I guess that's why I love it. It's so simple and accessible.
That's what you go for in your poems as well?
I hope mine are accessible. I know there are poems out there that are not accessible, mine. And I leave them out in the world because I like them. But I do try to have a narrative element so that somebody who's listening or reading can also be pulled into what's happening or what happened.
I found that some of your more autobiographical poems appeared, I guess I should say, the more explicitly autobiographical. A lot of them are, in at least some sense, autobiographical.
Sure.
But the more explicit ones really came closer to the end. I'm going to look for one. Where is it here? Do Not Disturb. That first stanza of Do Not Disturb I thought was very explicitly revealing about you. I'll read it very quickly. Do Not Disturb. She said, "Do not disturb your father." He said, "You're a loose cannon." The neighbor said, "Stop making waves." They all said, "No more back talk, young lady." Was that the kind of person you were? You always had something to say to somebody?
I think that's the kind of environment I grew up in, where young girls were squashed, basically, and told not what they should not do. Looking back, I think I sabotaged that. We all did, three girls and a boy, sabotaged the directions that came at us in various ways, even till today.
Would you be willing to read a poem for us?
Sure. Love reading.
I'm thinking of the poem January 13th, 5:28 p.m. on page 57.
Okay. Just a little preface. I don't often write funny poems, but this is a kind of funny poem. January 13th, 5:28 p.m. The digital clock on the stovetop suddenly went backwards, continuing all day until it reached 00.00, the end of the world, the prophets might say. I burned the sweet potato and cauliflower curry I was cooking for my weekly potluck, because every time I looked at the clock, it wasn't time to take the pot off the burner. Everyone said the taste was unusual. I didn't tell them they were eating food cooked after the end of time. Earlier, I had watched velvet colors stroke the peaks of the mountain, the pink of my very first lipstick. Tomorrow, I will ski alongside Alan, an autistic 14-year-old who goes straight down the hill yelling hello and goodbye in Spanish and Greek. When I drove through Dublin at 20 miles per hour, I passed words hand-chalked on a blackboard hanging from the side of the lamppost. Mary Healy died peacefully in her sleep last night. Services will be held this afternoon at 4 in the Congregational Church. We are still human, despite reports to the contrary.
I'm surprised that you described it as funny. It struck me as moving, not necessarily laugh out loud funny. Maybe it's because of the image of the woman who passed at the end.
It's a very moving poem, but people laugh at the first part of it, going backwards, food eaten after the end of time.
That's and that line actually is quoted at the end of your book, or at the back of your book, in one of your blurbs. We are still human despite reports to the contrary. This is one of a number of poems about time, right? Yes. There's a poem about, I think it's your mother, right?
My mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law, who
that's a funny poem.
who won't change the clocks back, won't spring them forward. It's just, nope, I know what time the chickens need to eat.
Exactly. She was wonderful. I mean, wonderful in this harsh peasant woman. She was Greek, tough, gritty person who really didn't care about anything else that was going on in the world except what she had to do. She was like that.
Mm-hmm. For this segment, we tend to ask our guests for 5 reading recommendations that they think our listeners should check out. And you've done something that no guest has done yet. And you've recommended the Declaration of Independence of the United States and the Constitution of the United States. Why?
Okay, I'll start with the Constitution, which I think is very relevant today. And I think it really helps to read it for the political problems or issues or turmoil or changes that we have today in the United States. And it's very eye-opening in how precise and careful it is. And that's one reason why I recommended that. But the Declaration of Independence, which if you read it out loud, you can see how hard these men worked to make this country into something that they truly believed in. They had to compromise, they had to redo it, they had to rewrite it, they had to change the language, they had to make it into a certain form. And all this time they had the British on their heads, on their shoulders, in their front yards. And finally they just said, you know what, we're going to do this and we want you to get out. And I just love that, the fact how they spoke in the Declaration of Independence, how patient they'd been, how they'd tried this, they tried that, they tried negotiations, and nothing had worked. And they made this huge decision, and they knew they'd go to war, but they wanted them out. It's just magnificent.
Well, Becky Dennison-Sacolario, thank you very much for coming in and speaking about your new book.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
That's Becky Dennison-Sacolario, author of the new poetry collection, No Foothold in This Geography. And you can find a list of Becky's top 5 reading recommendations at our website, nhpr.org. We are always fielding reading recommendations from listeners like you. Ken from Stratum recommends The Soul Web by New Hampshire author Stephen Netto. It's about a man who finds that his friends aren't who they seem to be, and his father, whom he thought was dead, is actually alive. Ken says, I read it, and for a first book, I found it very engaging, so much so that I could not put it down. If you like Tolkien and related fantasy fiction, this is a great book for you. That recommendation of The Soul Web by Stephen Netto comes from Ken in Stratum. What's your recommendation? Send it to us by email. The address is books@nhpr.org. We're also on Twitter, so you can tweet us @NHPRBookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR, celebrating 2 years of interviews with authors from or writing about the beautiful state of New Hampshire. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.